This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It is Meera Sivasodhi, and of course in the studio with me, it's Friday. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, has come by, popped by to do the show.
Yes, I know. Well, it's mandatory, isn't it?
Is it really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
well, it's just want to come and see you, that's all.
Yes, I'm sure. And Dr. Arif Anwar.
I rushed across town to make it. You know, seriously,
I'm
did.
Sure
the things
Meera.
I do for you, Meera.
Arif and myself, we're only humans.
I'm rushed sure across you town. Are. Just, you know, I think this should be a regular Friday show.
Absolutely.
Just the both of you.
You know, she just kicked me under the table. I'm not kidding. Did you
really?
Realize that?
That was me.
Really?
Well, my legs are a bit long.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Can't help it.
Stop digressing here. I think we've had eager listeners trying to find out what we're talking about.
Yeah,
I'm just stop this flirtation here.
No, okay, well, she's implying that we're
What did you drink before this?
I don't
both
know.
Both of you? Yeah.
Cough syrup.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Ice cream. I had my regular ice cream that I have downstairs.
It must be Friday, isn't it?
It is Friday. Okay, we're talking about the whole research that's come out, the test which identifies whether prostate cancer is aggressive or benign.
Yes.
Do you really want to talk about that?
Yes. You know what? This topic is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. You know, I use three incredibly, right? Okay. Well, this is the holy grail of prostate cancer, really. You know, well, there are several things about prostate cancer that is really, really unusual. You know, we all know that if men live long enough, they will get prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. So you cannot operate on every single man who get prostate cancer.
Right. Just before we go on, tell me about how, you know, a lot of many parts of our body, some organs shrink, right?
Yes.
But the prostate continues to grow.
That's right.
Why is that, George?
I have no idea.
You should know that, right?
Yeah, well,
yeah,
I should know that, but I have no idea. It is true. You're absolutely right. You know, the rest of our body will shrink apart from the prostate. Isn't that incredible? Something.
He's the urologist. I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
some
I mean,
kind of superpower organ or something.
Well, I don't know.
And then actually, it creates problems. I don't understand the logic behind
it. Well, you know, it creates a lot of work for urologists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it is one of these organs that is really, really not well understood. Not in the
poor thing, really.
Yeah. Well, not in the benign form, not in the cancerous form, and not in the natural forms. That's the reason why research like this is incredibly important. So basically, this is a story that came out not too long ago, about 10 days ago, mm-hmm. essentially from a very senior writer in BBC saying that prostate cancer aggression tests may avoid needless ops, you know, essentially pointing out that there's some early data presented in National Cancer Research Institute conference, highlighting that there are some early data separating the people who really are going to run into trouble with the diagnosis of prostate cancer and the people who are not. And then, you know, this is what I said, the holy grail, because there are several things about prostate cancer which are very important. I think I would divide them into four. Number one is to diagnose who is going to get prostate cancer. You know, we talked about the whole Angelina Jolie,
yes.
kind of like, you know, who is going to get it. When you look at the breast cancer, perhaps the BRCA genes is going to predict more accurately compared to the ones that are like for prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember straight after Angelina Jolie, there was a man who had BRCA genes actually specifically asked for prophylactic radical prostatectomy.
That's right.
You know, and that is to avoid something like 28% risk of getting it, but he thought it was quite high and then he went for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the first holy grail. The second holy grail is PSA. We all know that PSA stands for persistent stress and anxiety.
Is it rubbish? It is rubbish. I just wanted to clarify. The public service announcement in a radio state. Pretty sad. Well, the problem
about PSA is
Sorry, I'm just making it up.
Well, PSA is rubbish, but it's the best we have. We don't have anything else. You know, so until recently. And the second holy grail actually is, you know, for men who has got elevated PSA, it tells you something is very specific, that some something is wrong with your prostate, but it cannot tell you whether it's cancerous, it's benign, or it's infectious. So that's the reason why the first thing he said, Anwar said, is like, that's
Arif,
rubbish.
Arif.
Sorry, Anwar. So did I say Anwar? Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. I'm sorry.
I don't want to be political. I don't want to be politically associated.
I should just leave.
I'm politically benign.
I want to move on because I was embarrassed. I'm very embarrassed, Arif. Okay, right. And then the third thing is this. You know,
no one calls
this
me
is
Anwar.
All right. Okay, right. So, okay, we move on.
Only my French teacher okay. used to call me Anwar.
Prostate cancer aggression test. You know, this is it. This is the problem. This is the ones that actually for men who have the diagnosis of prostate cancer, how do you work out who needs treatment, who don't? You know, this is it.
That is the biggest problem.
That's the problem with the PSA test is that it's got a very, very poor specificity. Mm. The vast majority of people that it thinks have it do not have it.
That's right.
Right. So that's the problem. Needless treatment.
So this is one of the important subjects that, you know, BBC actually said that this could potentially be the game changer. In essentially it is. And we are very, very lucky to have Arif here. To tell us more about it, because there were some studies that has been done. I understand that you're involved in some of these studies.
Yes, well, we will come to that in just a short while. But our phone lines are open 0377 109 000. See, I almost forgot.
That's right.
The both of you have just got my head in a little bit of a mess right now.
Yeah. So it's your train of thoughts completely gone.
Yeah, it's completely gone.
Okay, let's recompose.
Arif, you were involved in the sequencing of the, you know, cancer genome?
Well, it was a project I did with a previous company. So I was a co-author on a paper where we worked with a group in the US and we sequenced what was the first cancer genome. And one thing to clarify, and George said it earlier, you know, when we talked about Angelina Jolie, is you have genetic changes which can be present in normal people, mm-hmm. right? You do not have cancer, which can predispose them or give them a higher risk of developing cancer or a different disease later on. This, and then there is another type of test, which is what this test is, this new prostate cancer test, which is looking at the tumor itself, because the DNA in the tumor actually starts to change when you have early cancer, and then it progressively gets more messed up. So there's two things to look at. One thing to look at is normal people who might have changes that, you know, markers they're born with in their DNA, which gives them a different risk. And then there's changes in the tumor, the DNA of the tumor itself.
Right. So you have been diagnosed with the cancer.
Both,
so
there's two different things. So this is the latter.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, essentially, in Malaysia, we have participated in some of these studies because this is the gold rush. All the companies are trying their best in order to identify who will be the people who run into trouble. The current way of identifying who are the aggressive and who are non-aggressive is a system called Gleason scoring. Mm-hmm. This is not ideal because what it does is that it actually will look at the main architecture of the cancer and then differentiate between grade 1 to grade 5. Let's say, you know, 5 is the most aggressive type and 1 is the least aggressive type. And then you look at the most prominent ones, the most prevalent ones, and then you plus a second figure, which is the second more prominence number. Let's say, for example, you have a Gleason score of 4+3. It means that most of yours are aggressive to a level of 4. Mm-hmm. Some of them are 3. So the total of 7, it's considered quite aggressive. You know, for somebody who's got Gleason 1+1, we can more or less tell patients that don't worry about it, don't do anything about it, because it's not going to cause you problems. However, the ones that actually are 5+5, we will really generally tell patients that it is a lot more aggressive. And that scale hasn't worked that well. So we are missing people who are in 3+3, for example, has gone completely out of hands and out of control. So this is when it will be interesting to see whether this will change the game.
I mean, this work, and I don't want people to get the impression that the BBC did this work. So the BBC wrote the story. So this work was done in the UK by Cancer Research UK, which is like the flagship cancer research centre in the UK, mm-hmm. and the University of London, my old uni. So basically what it looks at is, and there's two types of DNA that you can look at. There are changes in the DNA itself. Also, you can look at changes in the amount of certain gene, the amount of certain genes that are made. So this test looks at the amount of certain genes that are made, particularly genes associated with cell cycle. So the cell cycle is basically how, you know, when a cell divides and grows, these genes and proteins are involved in its division and its growth. So it's measuring the amount of these specific, the amount, not a particular marker, not a change in the DNA letters, but the amount of the gene.
Okay. And, you know, when you talk about genetics, how does that determine the prostate carcinomas? And why is it sometimes they remain silent and some of them become aggressive?
Well, that's a really good question, because, you know, there are many, well, the vast majority of tumors that there are end up being benign, and they don't, I mean, you get a tumor, but it doesn't really grow out of control. So something triggers, this is the kind of holy grail of cancer biology and medicine, is why do certain people and certain tumors within people, you know, become very, very aggressive. And when I say aggressive, when George and I say aggressive, we mean growing out of control, mm-hmm. you know, growing much, much larger and taking over the body's system. That's what cancer does. It's kind of like a virus, you know, it takes over things, becomes bigger and sucks resources from the body until something critical breaks, and then unfortunately that person can die from it. So it's you know, I've just come back from a conference, actually a genetics conference in Dubai, and one of the key things that was presented is that it's all a cascade. You know, there's a mechanism. If you have step A and step B, and suddenly it kind of just, you know, it's like it falls over. It's like a waterfall. You know, it gets to a certain point, and then suddenly, whoosh, you know, it's away, and all these things kick in to make the tumor grow much, much faster. But in certain people, it doesn't grow. Yep. You can have certain tumors that don't grow, and what this study has found in the UK is that in certain prostate, in certain tumors in prostate cancer, these genes have a much higher expression, higher amount being produced. And when they are produced in a higher amount, you have a far more aggressive tumor. Mm-hmm. Now, this is great from a healthcare point of view, mm-hmm. because if you can find those people, if you can find people who have the more aggressive form, just by doing this test rather than doing, you don't want to be doing, I mean, you don't want to do biopsies of people's prostates or people's lungs or livers, you know, if they have a cancer. The ideal thing is to do a blood test. If you can look at these, there are these things called, sorry to get technical, I'm getting serious now, there are these things called CTCs, okay. circulating tumor cells. And these are basically cells that come from the tumor itself, but end up in the blood.
Right.
So if you can purify those and check those, you don't have to do biopsies. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, that'll be really good.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this, you know, having said that, I mean, early on I said that, you know, this is the gold rush that all the companies who are involved in genetic studies are trying. There's one company that actually recruited University of Malaya as one of the centres in order to identify the people who have got cancer of the prostate, looking at their cancer genetic makeup and also their blood genetic makeup and trying to see whether they can find that missing link. The interesting thing one patient said to me was that, so, okay, if I was one of these contributing guinea pigs and I actually found out to have certain genes that will predispose me, will I get to find out things that will affect my next generation? So this is an interesting point, is that, you know, we are really stepping into this whole genetic mapping and genetic era, and then will that change the whole landscape of medicine, which is an interesting point that the patient raised, who was supposed to be one of the contributing participants for this study.
So is this what the research is saying? That, you know, with the protein that has been identified, that we can genes. Do a blood test?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the aim. I mean, right now in the study, there isn't that much detail. It's a press release, and that's where the BBC got the story. Mm-hmm. They haven't published their findings properly, in a journal. But they right now, they seem to be going back to biopsies and looking at biopsy data and relating it to that. But the ideal thing would be to do this CTC-based testing, mm-hmm. which is tricky to do, but if there's enough material, then you can get it. But just to add to what George said, you know, that to call it a gold rush is absolutely spot on, because I'm actually agreeing with George. So.
I'm sure, and you have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
Despite calling you Anwar,
I don't always
despite calling him Anwar.
Yes, today I'm feeling nice today.
I'm calling him Anwar.
Why do you agree this is a gold rush?
Well, we're in this, and I think in whatever part of medicine you're doing, right?
We're in this era. At the end of that.
We're in this era. I'm almost tempted to touch George's knee there, but I'll refrain. But you know, the
save me, please.
Yeah, it's okay.
I did it.
All right. Okay. Right. So, why do you think this is a gold rush?
So, stratify. I think a key phrase, you know, a key kind of buzz phrase for the 21st century, and regardless of, you know, whether you're a urologist or a cardiologist or you're a member of the public worried about your health, or you're in government, any government, is stratified medicine. Right. So, stratified medicine is, you know, the one type of drug or the one type of diagnostic or the one type of treatment for everyone doesn't fit everybody, right? There's no point treating somebody with intensive chemotherapy, radiotherapy, drug treatment for prostate cancer if the type of prostate tumor they have is a weak one, an indolent one, right? There's no point doing it. It's a waste of government resources. It's bad for the patient to go through all that treatment.
Yeah.
And it's bad for everybody in terms of cost. Maybe good for the doctor. The doctor makes money. But, you know, it's bad for everybody else.
Well, this is it. Because, you know, the thing is when this person actually highlighted, you know, because he had the prostate cancer diagnosis and it was Gleason 3 plus 3. Mm-hmm. And that's the most difficult one to treat because it's 3 plus 3 and you really don't know whether that 3 plus 3 in the future is going to become aggressive or is going to remain non-aggressive for a long time. And those were the patients who benefit from this genetic mapping. So, you know, although on our viewpoint as a clinician and actually looking at this as a gold rush because it is going to change the whole landscape of how we diagnose our patient and treat our patient in the future. For companies, perhaps that will generate financial, you know, bonus as a result of that. However, in the patient's viewpoint, in the ethics viewpoint, I really think that will be interesting to look at how people view going into this. You're really opening up a Pandora's box that may change the whole game plan in the future, not just in diagnosis of cancer. It will change the game plan because you will know your whole, you'll know everything.
Right. So, I mean, you know, there's already things like, it's not just prostate cancer. You know, there is a drug which is available. I think it's available in Malaysia, Herceptin, which is a breast cancer drug. Mm-hmm. And it's only for women who have a
Miro certain. Knows all the drugs that's available.
So, okay. I was trying to be serious.
No, I mean, it's like, you know, when you mention might be available in Malaysia, it's like, you know, she will probably tell you it's been available in Malaysia for a long, long
time. So it isn't just about prostate cancer, actually. I think where we are, you know, soon, you know, 5 or 10 years, you go to your doctor, he does a little test and says, well, you know, actually, you're not going to react to this drug and this drug is going to work better for you. And by the way, you might have an early indication of a particular cancer.
Mm-hmm. So this is it, you know, because
it's good for everybody, actually.
Well, is it good for everyone?
Is it good for everyone?
Because
it's good for everyone.
You know,
is it good for everyone?
Yes, Mira, what do you think? Because at the end of the day, finding out this particular situation where how this is going to take you as a person where the diagnosis of prostate cancer, you're just suddenly going to open up all the other possibilities or what other potential risks you have.
Which I don't want to know.
It's not risk. This is a diagnosis. This is a diagnosis, not a risk.
The potential, you will have knowledge. You have more knowledge of what will happen to you and your next generation.
Well, it's about two different things here. This is diagnosis.
You're talking about an aggressive person.
Okay, it's a situation.
Diagnosis and screening are different things.
If we project ourselves, right, in 20 years, 10, how long do you think this will be available?
He said 5 to 10 years.
Well, I can do
okay. Maybe 5 years from today, okay, a gentleman who has got prostate cancer wants to know whether his cancer should be watched or his cancer should be aggressively treated.
Which is what I want to find out. You always face that dilemma.
The whole idea of this particular test is to determine whether you should be treated or not.
So how can that be?
Well, when you open up the genetic makeup of your own situation, you're opening up possibility of what you will know for other diseases and also your next generation.
For an example, prostate cancer.
This particular test is called the Prolaris test, and it only tests for prostate cancer.
Okay, but what about, you know, you could be, you know, predisposed, your future generation, for breast cancer possibly, ovarian cancer?
That's a different thing, but yes, you can do that
you
as well.
You can do that as well. And hence what you mean.
Which is what I'm trying to suggest.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
So thank you, Mira, for making it a layperson's kind of like way. So that
that might not be good for
gentlemen,
everyone.
I need to go for a break here. I've been waiting for ages.
Okay.
Are you done?
Yes.
Okay. When we come back, we'll find out more about the genes behind this new research that's come out in relation to prostate cancer. If you have a question for Dr. Arif or Dr. George, send it through 016-2019. 8000. You can tweet BFM Radio, or you can call us. Our phone lines are open, 03-7710-9000. I think what we wanted to know, and when I discussed with you earlier, George, is whether or not something like this, a development like this, is indeed a blessing, or whether it's going to work against us.
Yes. And I really think that is the whole point. You know, you encapsulate the whole idea of we are advancing very quickly. However, it's all a lot of goods, but will there come also some drawbacks?
Right. What do you think? Is it all good? 03-7710-9000.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome back. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivis. So the Dr. George Lee consultant, urologist, and Dr. Arif Anwar, our resident geneticist in the studio with us. We're discussing prostate cancer and an aggression test that has come out. We have someone on the line. Hi, David. How are you today?
Fine.
You have a question?
Good afternoon, David.
Yes. Yeah, good afternoon, Dr. George.
Yes.
Yes.
Dr. George, I went for a medical checkup.
Yes, sir.
And an ultra scan was done on my abdomen.
Yeah.
And the result was that my prostate has enlarged.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to find out, what should I do? Should I follow up or with treatment or whatever?
Mm. David, how old are you, sir?
I'm 60.
Right, okay. David, in the beginning of the show, as you mentioned, as you recall, Mira mentioned that the whole body in mankind will shrink apart from prostate. And it is indeed true. So prostate enlargement itself is a natural progression of aging. However, it only becomes problematic if it causes you symptoms such as waking up at night to urinate or slowness of urine, unable to urinate, getting irregular infection. If you don't have any of those, you just get yourself checked up on a regular basis, that's fine. Why I would recommend for you just to do a blood test called PSA. We talked about it earlier to say that it is not the best things. It is a bit rubbish, like, you know, Dr. Arif mentioned. It is true that it is not good because if it's elevated, it tells you something is wrong with your prostate, but it doesn't say specifically what's wrong. If you get elevation in conjunction with benign, with an enlarged prostate, usually it signifies something that is benign. So don't worry. And then, you know, we can actually monitor how well it kind of like elevate with time and decide whether this is cancer or not. So my overall advice to you is don't worry about it. Unless you have symptoms, get some treatment to relax the prostate, help you to improve your symptoms. Alternatively, get your PSA checked out. Just ensure that this is not cancerous change.
All right.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mira. You're welcome. Bye-bye. You know, when you look at statistics, Asian men have a very low incidence of prostate cancer. Do we know why, Dr. Arif, on a genetic level?
I was just looking at this, at the stats for prostate cancer globally, and I'm looking at the WHO numbers. 272,000 was the mortality in 2008. But what's interesting is when you look at the prostate cancer stats and compare it to other cancers across the region, different regions, and the data I've got splits it globally, Africa, Americas, and Southeast Asia, there are different percentages. There are different percentages for different, you know, certain cancers are more common and less common in this part of the world compared to other regions.
Yeah.
And, you know, particularly if you look at breast cancer, gastric cancer, you know, the incidence is different also in terms of ethnicity as well.
Yes.
Has
that got a genetic link?
Well, the current consensus is that it's a combination of lifestyle, genetics, diet, you know, lifestyle being diet primarily, and environment. So there are things, you know, I mean, you know, related particularly to your diet, particularly to, of course, everyone knows about smoking and lung cancer and oral cancer, but alcohol intake also affects certain cancers. For example, gastric cancer, you know, there is it's been shown that there is a relationship. So there is something genetic going on, which leads to a difference, but
A lot of people think genetic environment plays a part as well. A lot of people link genetics to hereditary. You know, that's not quite the case, is it?
Is that the same thing? Hereditary
is it the same
it
thing?
Is the same thing. Well,
it is the same thing.
There's two things that are happening, and this is important to kind of clarify. One thing is what you inherit. So from your mother and father, your parents, you know, you, by the very fact that you're born, you're a mixture of DNA between your mother and father. And they also are a mixture from their mother and father, so yep. It becomes kind of a mishmash. So there are certain markers, and there are, for almost every cancer, there, you know, not just prostate, for every cancer, you know, prostate, breast cancer, gastric cancer, colorectal cancer, you know, those ones are the big, big causes of mortality in, you know, in Asia mm-hmm. and the world. There are markers that you're born with that give you a higher risk of cancer. And you see it in breast cancer, for example. In breast cancer, if there is a family history of breast cancer, you have to be very, very careful. You know, you should go and mm-hmm. have a regular check, you know, have a regular mammogram. Then the other thing, which is interesting, and is humans, every year, I just learned this very recently, it was a new paper that was published, and actually I saw it at this conference I was at 3 days ago, is every year humans, regardless of where we are, who we are, where we are, every year we acquire one new homozygous mutation. And a homozygous mm-hmm. mutation is a mutation where it occurs, you know, we have two strands of DNA in every cell yep. for each chromosome, where it doesn't occur in one but in both strands. So it's serious because it can't be repaired anymore. Once you get it, it's not repairable. There's nothing
to extraordinary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every year we acquire one, right?
How extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean...
So how does that disrupt...
So what my point about that yeah. is that there's certain types of... you know, there's a subset of incidence of cancer which is inherited, right? Just by what you were born with. Mm-hmm. But there's another subset which is things that you acquire, mutations in your DNA that you acquire. And going back to your earlier point, Mira, about triggering why does cancer kick off?
Yep.
You know, if it happens in the wrong place or it's in some sort of gene involved with cell cycle or, you know, cell development or growth, suddenly that can kick off and trigger a cancer. So, you know, you might not have any history of breast cancer or prostate cancer in your family, but it doesn't mean you might never get it. So you have to be aware that some of it's inherited, some of it is just by chance you acquire it.
Mm-hmm. I'm coming to a state where I think, you know, ignorance is bliss.
Knowing too much is scary. Yeah. I mean, actually, you asked a fantastic question. You know, you said in the US, it is number one killer in all prostate cancer.
Yep.
And then in Malaysia, perhaps it's number five, actually, yes. in all come to men. So surely there is some element of genetics. And then Arif also pointed out it's the lifestyle that actually inducing it. And a lot of studies shows that, you know, for example, in Malaysia, we are more affluent in our lifestyle, we're eating more meat, and then that cancer rate is going up. Mm-hmm. When you see Japanese men moving to American lifestyle yes. in California, that's going up. So I want to ask you, Arif, do you think the, you know, bearing in mind that we just heard your kind of like details, things about, you know, all these mutations happening every year,
yeah.
do you think for prostate cancer, it's more a nurture or a nature consequence? And then from that, because looking at these genetic map from this test, mm-hmm. you know, it's more focusing it more on the nature part of it. Is that true or not necessarily true?
I think it's both, you know. And you know,
but if your prostate doesn't stop growing, at some point everyone, well, do you think, is it right to say at some point everyone will get prostate cancer?
This is a very interesting thing, because there are autopsy studies done on men who die at certain ages, let's say for example 50, 60, 70, 80s and 90s, and people actually find some degree of cancerous changes in men yeah. up to that point, something like 90% in 90 year olds.
See, pancreatic cancer, there is a similar test, actually, George, which has been developed for pancreatic cancer.
Similar test meaning?
Similar test to this prostate cancer test, which can show you whether you have very early
aggressive pancreatic cancer or not.
And pancreatic cancer can take 20 years, right, from the beginning, the very first few cancer cells mm-hmm. in your pancreas, to the point where... And pancreatic is a tragically brutal cancer, because the survival rate, I mean, in cancer, often doctors talk about survival rate given a number of years. So pancreatic cancer, the survival rate for a five-year survival rate is just 5%.
Okay.
So
Steve Jobs.
It's brutally. Yeah, Steve Jobs.
That's
and,
right.
You know,
and, lung cancer and, is the other one, isn't it?
Lung cancer also, I mean, it's, the treatment for lung cancer is improving all the time, mm-hmm. but pancreatic. So it can take 20 years for it to go from the first few cells to the point whereby you might be in such a bad condition that you might be diagnosed. And by the time you're diagnosed, your survival rate is going to be 5%.
Right. You know, okay, so we've come up with this test, right? So, you know, let's just say we go on to, you know, it hits the market and we can all go and test, do a blood test and figure out whether or not we have an aggressive tumor or not. Right? Is that what we're saying?
That's not for the masses. I mean, from what my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, if this test is approved, let's say in 3 years, fine, 5 years' time, you know, Arif thinks that it's within 5 years.
Yeah.
What it means to urologists is that for men who had a diagnosis of prostate cancer will come to see me and say, I want this test to decide whether I get treatment or I want to watch. So I want to decide whether I want to expose myself to aggressive surgery that might leave me incontinent, impotent, and also undergoing that. I think that's true.
Yeah,
I don't know whether...
The way I see it, and this is a little... This is my... maybe I'm slightly biased, but my view is, you know, if you're doing eye surgery, do you want to... And, you know, we have lasers to do eye surgery. Mm-hmm. Do we still want to use scalpels to do eye surgery?
Right.
So if you look at the UK, for example, and this is real, George. Mm-hmm. I know you've been out for the UK for a while. But the UK is bringing out the NHS, one of the most conservative, slow-moving bodies on the planet. Right? And
it's,
you know,
true.
A million employees, and they move very, very slowly to make decisions.
It's hard to believe, right? You know, but, you know, it has to remain unchanged since 1960s.
Both of you are products of the NHS.
Do you know? Of course, yeah. I'm not. So,
okay.
So the NHS is bringing out a cancer panel. This is really real. This is real. This is happening. If you Google it, you'll find it. They're bringing out a cancer panel. So they're putting multiple markers onto a single test, and they're going to use it as a screening tool. That right now they're doing it on 100,000 people as an exploratory to see, does it make a difference to survival rate? Does it make a difference to mortality?
In general or for specific cases?
For screening, for as a general tool for anyone over 40, male and female.
Mm-hmm. For anything.
So it's a very, very innovative
move. See, that's what I was saying.
Right?
I mean, I can't be
It's a very
a
innovative, bold move.
Yeah.
Move.
Which is what I was thinking. I can't be doing a test for, you know, breast BRCA gene. I don't want to do a test for, you know, prostate cancer. I mean, it's so much.
Yeah.
Can I just do one blood test and find out whether I'm predisposed to?
Do you want to?
No.
Yeah. See, that's I don't know.
Well,
you know,
Arif always gets me on this one. But
yeah.
You know what? We've got
not
Amiral
everybody.
Waiting.
No, but everybody has a choice.
Yeah, everyone
has a choice.
Everybody has a choice.
Yes.
Amiral's waiting with the market update. Our phone lines are open 0377-109000. I know Dan's on the line. Just hold on, Dan. We'll come back to you just after Amiral is done. BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasodhi. We're discussing a prostate cancer aggression test with Dr. George Lee and Dr. Arif Anwar. We have Dan who's been waiting on the line. Okay, not the best idea to take Dan's call at the moment. Okay.
angry Dan.
He's been waiting quite a while. That's Dan, do call us back. We'll be happy to speak with you. Okay, he's on the other line now. Just give me a sec. Hi, Dan. How are you?
Hello.
Dan, can you hear us?
Good afternoon,
yes,
Dan.
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Right. Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
You want to switch off your radio, Dan?
Yes, we can. Yep. I have done so.
Okay. Your question.
Okay. Yeah. The Dr. George just touched something with regards to... you know, if we want to do it and we want to know what the situation where our prostate is concerned. Now, if I wanted to do a test, do I need to go to a hospital or can I have the blood test or this particular test be done by a chem lab, say, for example? And what do I tell them, you know, what should I be looking for?
Dan.
That's number one.
All right.
Yeah, because with regard to lifestyle and things of that sort, you know, I do still want to do my ballet and things of that sort. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
Did he say ballet?
He did say ballet.
Ballet. All right, sorry, I thought I missed that. Yeah.
Okay.
Question two.
And that's generally the situation because I think there's a lot. I mean, we have a group of friends meet every weekend and we discuss various things, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one subject which which I think really needs to be taken another step forward in terms of enlightening the people of, you know, who are in their tender ages, 15 and above. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll hear your reply on the radio.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Have a good weekend. Take care. Bye.
You too. Bye bye.
Well, I assume, you know, the ballet is that, you know, incontinence will stop you from doing that. Indeed, you know,
it does.
Well, because one of the problems about the current treatment for prostate cancer is very radical. I mean, although we have moved into the robotic era, today I've just, we just attended our Malaysia Urological Congress meeting in Kuantan, mm-hmm. and then we highlighted that despite in best hands, you know, people who had thousands and thousands of operations under their belt, they can only achieve 65% potency rate, and they can only achieve 80% continence rate. So we're still looking at large number of men who undergo such operation will not be able to do ballet afterwards.
Right.
So that is part of the problems, and then therefore to tease out people who can have this or not, you know, it really is going to be a change, you know, game changer. What Dan is predicting is what is the future is going to be like. I assume there are kind of like two directions that we're going to move. I mean, Arif hopefully will enlighten us. 5 years from today, what I predict is this is going to change a lot of landscape of medicine. One thing is that men can actually turn up, they can even send their saliva or something like that to a lab or something like that, and a report will come out and say, what are your risk of getting these things in statistics?
Really? In saliva?
Well, let me. I mean, George is right, but I mean, I do want to caution everyone. So, I mean, this bit of news, I mean, it's very, very encouraging. But it takes time for these things to, like Dan was asking in his question, can he just go to the hospital and give a sample? And yes, there are tests that can be done that look at your risk of developing different cancers. However, even though I work in this business, you know, I do want to caution everyone that it is important to wait until they have been properly tested on a large population, are properly regulated, and they're launched through official channels.
But is it right that the moment it doesn't exist, tests?
The tests can be done, but there's one thing which is, you know, it's been trialed and it's been done by a, you know, very reputable place, CR UK, Cancer Research UK. But is it something that's going to be available in the UK or in a clinic or a hospital in Malaysia tomorrow? No, it is not. It has to go through proper channels, has to go through proper testing. Does it really work, right? Just because it worked on 5,000 people or 10,000 people, does it work on a million people?
Yeah. Great
and
point.
It might not work on a million people, right?
You know, so, and also, it may work for European demographic, may not work for Asian.
Exactly, that's another good point.
And, you know, so is it economically viable? Because only 10 to 15% of prostate cancer cases are aggressive. Is that economically viable?
Well, it does. This is where, if you think about it, I mean, I think medicine, the way I look at medicine is I look at it from a patient's perspective, you know, and also right at the other end, at a whole government perspective. So if I talk about it from a patient's perspective, from a viability perspective, even if the test costs $50 or $100, and if you need to take it every year, maybe, if you're a man over 45 or 50, you know, If it's proven to be something that works in all populations in 2 or 3 years or 4 years, I think it's worth doing, right? You know, it's worth doing to avoid having to have unnecessary treatment. Or should you find, God forbid, that you do have an aggressive form, that you get treatment very, very early. And with cancer, like in any medical procedure, the earlier you treat it, the higher the chance you have that you'll survive it.
Mira, this is a part where I'm going to agree with Arif. Agree with me early on. Because now, one thing, when you say that is it economically viable, you imagine in Malaysia we spend X million of ringgit on robotic surgery, okay? With this test, you can actually decide that, you know, out of, let's say, 10,000 robotic surgery that is performed, maybe 15% of them were necessary, the other 85% were not.
That's right.
So, you know, if you talk dollars and cents, you are really teasing out those people who are not necessarily required to have an operation. And on the other hand, there, of course, is that, you know, side effects and also the complication of surgery and, you know, human life, because the operation itself is not a simple operation. It carries mortality. So in terms of financial costs, life costs, and also complication costs, I think this is economically
absolutely
viable.
I mean, I actually have a friend who has terminal colorectal cancer. You know, he's a brilliant man, inventor. and you know he's very very early 60s, and you know if I mean he's been told he has months to live, mm-hmm. And you know I've lost we've all lost people that we know who in, you know in their 50s and 60s before their you know their time. We'll hope we live into our 70s and 80s and beyond. So,
but the both of you are living up to 150. Remember.
Yeah, trying. Well, with this, I mean, we might all live down. Yeah.
So, thinking of it from the other side, right, or the government level, is all governments, the Malaysian government included, spends, you know, a very significant amount of money, billions and billions of dollars on healthcare for Malaysian people, Malaysian citizens and Malaysians. If you can think of it, if you think of it from a, this is kind of an argument that people have, a discussion people have, which is, look, the true cost of using advanced preventative healthcare, advanced stratified medicine, this is stratified medicine, splitting people into higher risk, lower risk. The advantage of that is, from a government perspective, actually the government saves money as well. Mm-hmm. And the government creates money because you have all these people who may have died in their 50s and 60s and 70s who then go on to live until they're 72 and die of maybe something, you know, much more benign, much less serious. Right. And they live their full potential. So they contribute to the environment, to the nation, you know, to their families. So there's all these hidden costs, you see, which you don't see. What's the cost of actually, if you have someone in your family who's terminally ill with cancer, what is the cost of that? It's not just the cost of treating that person, yep, in a hospital.
It's a social
also
cost as
the
well.
Relatives, the, yep, the families involved. You know, it's beyond money.
Okay. Have the both of you, or will the both of you do a PSA test when it's time, or you need to? Or have you already done it?
I've done my genome. I know.
You do.
I've done my genome. I've done my genome.
That's interesting.
Are you ready to reveal?
So, you know, I know certain things. But I can, yeah, I'm happy to discuss it.
No. I think it will be for me anyway. It will be a huge step to decide whether I want to do my genome or not in the future, because I can't even bear to do a PSA test. You know,
you're very brave, Dr. Aaron.
So, well, I'm kind of, you know.
Yeah,
I'm a convert.
Is that why you're?
I'm an evangelist of.
No, can I ask genetics?
Is that why you're living your life to the fullest right now?
Well, for example, I know that I have a 3-point-something x-fold higher chance of getting colorectal cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
what does that mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Compared to the average. So, if you take the entire human population, the average the person has a certain lifetime risk of developing colorectal cancer, right? I have certain genetic markers, 3 actually, which mean that, based on published scientific data, if you have those markers, those people, and they've already passed away, the people who have already died, people who have those markers actually had, you know, a higher, more of those people got colorectal cancer. So it's hard science.
How accurate is it?
Well, this is where you have to be very careful, you see, because that's a really good question, because there's accurate ones and not so accurate ones.
Yeah.
So you have to use the biggest amount of data. You know, and this shouldn't be done. The research study should not have been done on 20 people in Alaska. Right. It's kind of useless, right? You know, all the markers that we look at, they're all based on studies done on multi-ethnic populations, thousands of individuals across longitudinal studies looking at people at different years and following them through. So it's important to be prudent and look at the right studies.
So does that mean you're three times more predisposed to colorectal cancer as opposed to someone who isn't?
As opposed to the average person the average risk.
So does it change you?
So I do certain things, for example.
God, you should look at George's face right now.
Yes, I just want to know.
He's horrified.
I'm right. I'm good.
Seriously. It's just like, how does
I've still got about 42 years of school fees if I had up to 3 kids to pay.
Okay.
So yeah, don't worry, I'll be around for a while.
That's an interesting kind of mentality, isn't it, to decide what would you like to know?
Well, you know, I mean,
what else?
Well, I also found out I'm a carrier of hemochromatosis, which is a very serious blood disorder. Okay, but I'm a carrier, which means I don't have hemochromatosis. Mm-hmm. But
you could pass it on to your future generation.
You know, I have 3 children, so the probability that if I had 4 children, for example, and make the maths easy, you know, if I had 4 children and I'd married somebody who was also a carrier of hemochromatosis, I would have a 1-in-4 chance that one of the 4 children would have hemochromatosis. But my wife is not a carrier, I think. She hasn't done her genome.
Oh, why is that? We should have her on the show. See, she's like me.
She doesn't want to. She doesn't want to clone her organs or anything. She wants to die at a natural death.
A natural so death. Unlike what you have planned.
Well, we'll see.
It is fascinating, isn't it? When we talk about genetics, there's always the same argument about how much do we know and how it will change mankind.
Yeah, and how much do you really want to know?
And how it will shape our future.
Yeah, I suppose when it becomes, you know, everyone is going ahead and doing it and it becomes quite normal, then people will buy into the idea. But until such time...
Gattaca.
Probably might not be.
There was a question, right?
Yes, there was a question. Just very quickly.
See, I'm doing your job here.
Okay. There's, just take over next time. Esteemed doctors, the best prophylactic...
Esteemed.
Yes, esteemed.
Indeed. Thank you.
The best prophylactic medicine for prostate cancer is...
Pu'er
tea in copious amounts of it daily, weekly, yearly, or till the day you drop dead. Okay.
Pu'er cha is a type of Chinese tea. I mean, when sometimes you go to really like swanky Chinese restaurants, and then they always get these kind of like pictures. They hang it on the wall, and then it looks like a biscuit, but it is actually imprint of like dragons and things like that. Actually, is tea, and then it's like a vintage. It's extremely awfully expensive, and then it has many medicinal effects. It also have contraindication. For example, stone former, people who get stones regularly that will have high content of oxalate that promotes stone formation.
So you shouldn't take it then.
Well, no. I mean, the thing is that there are some studies that correlate frequent drinker of certain teas with less prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, also, you know, tomatoes and things like that.
Yes.
I mean, of course, this gentleman here, you know, esteemed listener. And then, you know, of course, you know, the Japanese will argue that it's the Japanese green tea that is the best. And then, you know, Chinese will argue about pu'er. And then, you know, at the end of the day, there are correlations. I'm sure it will do you good. But for preventing cancer, probably will play some role, not completely.
It does play a role.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all these, you know, actually I've tried...
Antioxidant.
I've
had that tea.
It's quite
brown
tea, very, right? Yes. Very
pungent. It tastes
pungent.
Quite strong and it's nice.
It's a nice tea. Yeah. It's actually very nice. Yeah. I like it.
Very nice tea.
Yeah.
So they're all, this whole class of, you have to think of your body as a little battleground, right? So you've got, daily, you've got things that are carcinogens, things that will damage your DNA and potentially kick off start of a tumor anywhere. It could be your prostate, could be your breast, whatever. So carcinogens, you know, are fried food is a carcinogen. Smoke toxins are carcinogens. There's all sorts of things that you're exposed to. UV sunlight is a carcinogen. Mm-hmm. Things that can cause cancer. But then you've got to balance it off with things that are antioxidants. Antioxidants kind of suck up these things called free radicals. So green tea actually is a good example.
Okay.
Pu'er tea, I haven't read a paper on it, but probably is also an antioxidant. And you've got other things, you know, fruit. And so, you know, if you have a good diet and you avoid some of those bad things, then...
Message, George, to conclude.
Well, I think this is a very important study. I really think that in the future, if this materialized, it will change many men who will avoid many men who undergo unnecessary prostate operation. I really hope that, you know, with the data, we, like what Dr. Arif said, that we will fine-tune it, make it accurate, and hopefully it will prevent many, many men from having unnecessary operation and many, many men continue having ballet lessons.
Arif?
You know, a very interesting stat to end off is more than 50% of all drug treatment, all medical treatment, actually has no good or bad effect on you, right? And that's primarily due to your genetic disposition. So I think it's you know, like it or not, seriously, like it or not, we're hurtling towards this era of preventative medicine and stratified medicine. And I think the net effect will be good for everyone.
Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today. Dr. Arif Anwar and Dr. George Lee on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.